Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the 44th President of the United States, President Barack Obama.
孟浩. Good afternoon. It is a great honor for me to be here in Shanghai and to have this opportunity to speak with all of you. I'm very sorry that my Chinese is not as good as your English, but I am looking forward to this chance to have a dialogue. The United States insists we do not seek to contain China's rise. On the contrary, we welcome China as a strong and prosperous and successful member of the community of nations.
Blue Monday.
Gung ho, everyone. It's the Savage Nation. What are you going to say? So he bowed down in Japan. He bowed down to some stooge. What are you going to do? Get excited over it? He bowed down in Saudi Arabia also. He's an embarrassment. He's a young guy. He got thrust into the presidency. He's doing the best he can. I mean, give the guy a break. I mean, so what that he's not capable of the job? What's the difference? It's a figurehead position anyway. What are you so excited about? I mean, you look at what's going on. Massacre at Fort Hood. Big deal. What does it mean to him? He's already on to bigger things. Now, you'd think the Senate would want to look into the act of terrorism on our shores. You'd think they want to look into the act of jihad on our shores, the Allah Akbar yell. But no, today the Senate Armed Services Committee postponed its briefing on the deadly Fort Hood massacre at the request of Obama. Despite calls from lawmakers to press forward with a congressional investigation into the terrorist rampage that killed 13 soldiers and wounded 29, the Democrats buried the Fort Hood massacre at the request of the Democrat lawmaker, Senator Carl Levin, as you well know, a man who has never fired a Daisy BB gun. He is the head of the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee. And Senator Carl Levin told Fox News that the meeting on Fort Hood is delayed at the request of Obama. Army Secretary John McHugh and Army Chief of Staff George Casey. You know George Casey. He's the one who said diversity is more important than basically survival. We're talking about Army psychiatrist Major Nidal Malik Hassan, who went on a jihad and killed quite a few people. Now, as you well know, this is a cover-up. As you well understand, this is a terrorist act on our shores, probably the largest since 9/11. As you well know, Obama ran off to Asia. As you well know, Obama has buried the connection to Islam. As you well know, Obama has said to lawmakers, resist the temptation to turn this tragic event into the political theater, which is absurd. What do you mean the political theater? The guy screamed Allah Akbar. He was in touch with Al-Qaeda. His connections go all the way to Pakistan. What is he talking about? There is no investigation. It's a cover-up. Now, I realize it's Blue Monday and next week is Thanksgiving. And I do understand that most of us would rather talk about cooking a turkey than how our goose is being cooked by these Trotskyites in the White House. I understand that. And so if you'd rather talk about turkey recipes, don't call me. I'll save that for next Wednesday. I think what I'd rather do to get you interested is play something from last year, which is the gerbil man, Richard Gere. You know him as Richard Gere, but we call him Richard Gere. And Richard Gere was adamant about the situation in Tibet all through the Bush administration. Why? Richard Gere was very upset over Tibet, and he had meetings, and he was the chairman of the International Committee for Tibet, the ICT. And I'm sure he meant very well when he attacked George Bush for not seeking a hydrogen war with China over Tibet. But now that, of course, his man, Obama, is in the White House, bowing down to those in Asia and elsewhere, Richard Gere, the gerbil man, is very, very silent on the issue. But I thought for the sake of clarity and the sake of history and for the sake of sanity and, of course, ultimately for the sake of absurdity and laughter, we dug up what Richard Gere said in Congress about the situation in Tibet in April of 08 while George Bush was president. And you have to ask yourself, why is it that Richard Gere is saying nothing now? Right? Why is he saying nothing now? I think the best thing is to start with clip 27. It's not about Tibet, but it shows you how sick this man is in the head.
But with this new administration, I think we can recapture that innate instinctive feeling that we really can genuinely care for and love each other. Everywhere on the planet. Everywhere. And no one is outside of that embrace. Nobody. Everyone gets it. We don't hold it back from the bad guys, from the guys with the wrong color, the guys that live in the wrong places. Everybody gets that.
So, in other words, Richard Gere would hug Major Nassan. And I guess Richard Gere and the people in Hollywood feel that if Major Hassan, the Muslim terrorist, in my opinion, had only been hugged more often, he wouldn't have gone on a shooting rampage. I suppose you could argue that if Hitler had gotten enough love early in his life, there wouldn't have been World War II. But let's go back to the testimony before Congress in April of 08 when Richard Gere, the gerbil man, was all excited about Tibet. And we'll start now with clip 22.
I've been especially... I don't know much about this media thing of microphones and this, but... Look, I'm just so pleased and... on many levels that this meeting has taken place, but also the incredible education that you all have on the subject. It's something that touches me very deeply. I'm here as chairman of the board of directors of the International Campaign for Tibet, which
wow.
advocates on behalf of the rights of Tibetans and a
Ooh.
Negotiated solution on the future of Tibet.
All right. Now, what would a negotiated solution on the future of Tibet hold? Do you think it would hold Dong Ho? I mean, what does he mean, the future of Tibet? With who was he negotiating? It's unbelievable to me. Listen to clip 24.
Since Buddhism took hold in Tibet 1,300 years ago, Tibetans have worked single-pointedly to rid themselves of anger and violence and hatred, turning these into the noble expressions of love, compassion,
He doesn't know what
and
he's
forgiveness.
Talking about, by the way. Wait, hold it. You know that American Buddhists, the converts, are naive? They're historical morons. They haven't any idea what Buddhism is. They have a glorified view of Buddhism that never existed. To them, all Buddhists are peace-loving and peaceful people. That's like saying all Muslims are peace-loving and peaceful, or that all Christians are peace-loving and peaceful, or that all Jews or Hindus are peace-loving and peaceful, because each of the tracts and each of the religions have peace and love in them. But the history of Buddhism is one of well, about the same as every other religion, including a great deal of violence. Americans are idiots when it comes to Buddhism, and they think that all Buddhists have been peace-loving from the beginning. Now, this schmuck, Richard Gere, is no different. Listen again to clip 24 in context.
Since Buddhism took hold in Tibet 1,300 years ago, Tibetans have worked single-pointedly to rid themselves of anger and violence and hatred.
Hold it. How does he know that? He knows that every Tibetan has worked to rid themselves of hatred and love and hatred and anger? Where did he learn that? He knows that every Tibetan is rid of hatred and anger? The guy's crazy. Do you have any idea how crazy this man is? Now, here's the topper in 25.
Let's not be fooled by the Communist Party's concept of a harmonious society, which is the catchphrase now that's going around. We now know that this is a very... hollow slogan. Genuine peace and stability do not emerge from the barrel of a gun. Genuine harmony between people is based on the ability to speak the truth And this requires dialogue and goodwill, both of which, if we listen to the rhetoric coming out of Beijing, are in short supply among the Chinese leadership.
Now, that's Richard Gere a year ago, in April of 08, actually, when George Bush was president. But now that his man, Obama, is in the White House, and more specifically in Beijing, Richard Gere and the other gerbils of Hollywood are completely silent. Totally silent about Tibet, totally silent about Beijing, and totally silent about a so-called negotiated solution on the future of Tibet. Why is that? You don't have to call me on this. You know the answer. So, whatever you want to talk about, and I know you'd rather not talk about this, maybe the KSM trial in New York City that Obama announced. The fact of the matter is that the KSM trial in Manhattan, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's trial, will be an intelligence coup for Al-Qaeda, and that is exactly why Obama ordered it be held in Lower Manhattan. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, so Obama's in China, and he's kowtowing to China. I guess he has no choice in the matter. They hold our notes. And he's not going to raise any issue of human rights, even though that was a big issue during Bush. The libs went crazy on human rights. As you well know, human rights are a tool for liberals. They don't really mean it. They use it as a tool against Republicans or conservatives. But the fact of the matter is, if we listen to clip 8, it's very worrisome. Listen to that one.
There is a Chinese proverb, consider the past and you shall know the future. Surely we have known setbacks and challenges over the last 30 years. Our relationship has not been without disagreement and difficulty.
All right. He said, consider the past and you shall know the future. That's a nice Chinese proverb. Now, what is the past of China that we should look forward to? Does anyone have any idea what the past might portend for the future? WOR, New York, Peggy, you're first up. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I disagree with you on Obama going to visit China or all the other Asian countries because, as the saying goes, you keep your friends close, but you got to keep your enemies closer. He has
I know, but, you know, foreign policy should be built on something more than a line out of The Godfather.
Well, he's got to know what our enemies are up to. He's got to find out.
Ma'am, I didn't say he should not go to Japan or China. However, there's never been an historical example of a president bowing down to a Japanese leader. Are you aware of that?
That's trivial, bowing down. But he has to go there.
Whoa. What do you mean? What do you mean that's trivial? People who know the difference know it isn't trivial. You don't think it's shameful for a president to bow down to a Saudi Arabian king and have a gold necklace put around his neck and then go to Japan and bow down to a Japanese leader who's smirking at him? You don't understand the significance of that to Asian people, and you don't even understand Asian people. It's all about face. Our president is an embarrassment.
That's their faith. That's what people do. That's what they do. That's their protocol.
Peggy, you know, you sound to me like one of the fishmongers that I left New York as a result of people like you. What do you mean that's what people do? Where do they do this? He's not people, Peggy. He's the president of the United States. He's not people. He's not you. Maybe you would bow down to a Japanese when you go in for sushi and you want an extra napkin or a glass of water, you know, like Larry David. But presidents don't bow down to Japanese leaders. They've never done it before. Why do you suppose that that's acceptable?
Because that's what their heritage is. That's what they people do when in those countries. That's their heritage.
Wait. Peggy, which people do that?
Oh, the foreign people, the Japanese, the Chinese people.
Peggy, I realize you're trying your best, but Peggy, darling, this is the president of the United States we are talking about. People bow down to the leader of Japan who are subservient to him. Do you understand why it's caused such a stir throughout intelligence circles in the Western world? It's never been seen before.
Enemies. He's got to know what's going on in these different countries. He's got to keep close to their...
Peggy, is there anything that Obama could do that you would find fault with?
Probably not.
Peggy, you are exactly the type of useful idiot that brought communism to power in Russia. Are you aware of that? You see, you're the kind of woman who thinks you know everything because you read the Daily News. But the fact is, you are known as a useful idiot to those who would like to turn us into slaves, Peggy. And it's a sad day when you don't understand the difference between the President of the United States and yourself. But thank you very much for trying, Peggy. 1-800-449-8255. On to Monterey, California. Trish, welcome to the program.
Hello. I wanted to let you know, did you know at 3 o'clock they said that Hassan had soldiers confess to him war crimes, and he asked to prosecute them and waive his confidentiality as a psychiatrist? And so they're going to blame this on these soldiers.
Well, of course. Isn't that what Obama's going to do? That's why they just swept the Fort Hood investigation under the rug. I think Obama's working for the enemy as far as I'm concerned. He may as well be. I mean, he doesn't actually need to carry around an Al-Qaeda membership card to be working for Al-Qaeda. Why would he bring Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to trial in Manhattan? Why would he do that? Do you realize what a heyday this is going to be for Al-Qaeda and a mockery, what a mockery it's going to make of the victims' families?
Well, and he already pleaded guilty. When they were going to try him in Guantanamo, he had pled guilty, but the liberal lawyers had held up the prosecution. So now he's not going to plead guilty.
Trish, the liberal lawyers fundamentally are either insane or working for the enemy. There's no question that we've been hijacked by a small band of radical left-wingers. Every poll that is done in America shows that the majority of voters are centrist or to the right of center. And yet we are ruled by a small band of radical leftists from the universities and from Chicago. How is it possible that we've been basically conducted, a coup has been conducted in America, where a small band of radical leftists have turned the country upside down? They do not have the mandate to run this radical agenda onto the people. You know that and I know that. And yet the caller before you was one of these know-it-all fishwives from Brooklyn who read the Daily News and thinks she knows world events. They all do it. They all do it. What do you mean they all do it?
Savage.
Anyway, look, we're sitting here, we're watching the world go round, and we're trying to make heads or tails of it, and I'm commenting on it. It's that simple. So you got the president in China. He's not the first president to go to China. But you have to ask yourself, why has he traveled abroad so frequently in such a short period of time? The man has almost wrecked America, and now he's traveling the world and apologizing for America as though we're a bad nation. And he goes to Japan, he bows down to the Japanese prime minister, something that has never been done in history before. He's not an ordinary person. It's a mark of deference. It's a mark of submission. And you could see the Japanese prime minister laughing at him, and you could see the Japanese prime minister's wife looking in actual, not appalled, but shock, that this naive man, this naive college teacher, Obama, would think that it's appropriate to bow down to this unknown prime minister. And people are saying, you know, symbolism is everything. First of all, in Asia, symbolism is very much more important than it is here. Don't underestimate face here, you know. If you've ever been in a face-to-face match with another man, don't tell me that only the Asians talk about losing face. I've known about losing face and protecting face since I've been a young boy. My father taught me very young, don't let anyone get the best of you, and your pride is more important to you than you may imagine. And if you lose your face or if you lose your pride, you're going to lose everything. I mean, I was taught that since I'm a child. So don't lecture me about that the Asians, to them, face is important. You mean it's not important to us? We're nobody. We have no culture. So the fact is he goes there and he bows down. So did you make a big deal out of it? No. But you can make a deal out of it. It shows you the continuing naivete of Barack Obama, that whatever the man touches, he does wrong. He has done nothing right yet. Now let's go to New York City, the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed deal. Here is a guy who was the mastermind of the 9/11 travesty. And the man says, okay, we're not going to try this murderer, this terrorist, in a military court. He should have been hung and killed a long time ago. We're going to fly him to New York. We're going to try him in a courthouse 2 blocks from the World Trade Center. And everyone, including the Wall Street Journal, writes, this will be an intelligence bonanza for Al-Qaeda. and the hostile nations that will view the U.S. intelligence methods and sources that such a trial will reveal. And that is because the vermin who will defend Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the filth from NYU, Columbia, Harvard, who are lining up, the very people that this type hates, the very people that this type would gladly cut to pieces and kill, will line up to defend them and take more of their Prozac in order to make America cringe. And they will demand, these defense lawyers from NYU, they will demand pretrial documents that will give away virtually all of our intelligence and military operational strategies. They will press hard to reveal intelligence secrets in open court. Our intelligence agents and soldiers who work so hard to bring this human garbage to trial will be the ones to be put on trial by the vermin on drugs at NYU Law. Do you understand this? Joe in New York, do you understand why I'm getting agitated over this?
Michael, you there?
Joe, yeah. Do you understand how crazy this is?
Yes, I do. I worked in two World Trade Center. This is a travesty. They're bringing this guy back to New York, two blocks from where there's still a hole in the ground. I just drove by it. There's still a hole 8 years later. And they're bringing this lunatic back to show him how proud he should be of what he's done to this country. It's a blatant slap in the face.
But in addition to that, why is Obama doing this? Obama is doing this to put the CIA on trial. Do you understand, Joe, that that's the deflected desire of Obama and Holder here?
Yes.
What they want to do is put American intelligence agents on trial because the vermin from NYU Law and Columbia Law and Harvard Law who are going to defend Khalid Sheikh Mohammed are going to demand that the CIA agents who actually interrogated him come into the court, and they will be put on trial the same way they put cops on trial who arrest murderers in any city in America.
It's a very, very frightening thing what's happening, Michael.
It's not frightening. It's agitating to believe that such a naive, radical left-winger like Obama, a man completely off the ken of American politics, you know, this man's brand of Democrat politics is so beyond the norm of Democrat politics that I would say it's as close as you can find to the Communist Party USA. If you were to read the CPUSA literature, you would see that Obama's acting out the CPUSA the desires. It makes no sense to anyone what the man is doing.
I asked you a few months ago.
I'll boil it down for all of the Shirleys in New York who think they know everything because they read the Daily News once in 2008. Question to Shirley, who called a little while ago. Could Barack Hussein Obama have passed an FBI background test to have become an FBI agent prior to becoming president? The answer is no. Barack Hussein Obama could not have joined the FBI owing to the people he had associated with prior to applying and owing to the fact of his questionable background. Do you understand that we now have a president who is so shady he couldn't even be a member of the Secret Service that guards him? This, to me, boils it all down into one simple term. New York, Mana from heaven. Go ahead, Mana.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Savage. Thank you for taking my call. And it's a pleasure talking to you. You are simply wonderful. I have a comment and a question. The comment is that President Obama, I think he was bowing before the emperor, the Japanese emperor, and not the Japanese prime minister. Wait a minute.
The emperor? He's not the emperor. He's the son of the emperor.
He's the present king. He's the king. I mean, he's the prince.
I understand who he is, but it's never been done before. How come General MacArthur didn't feel necessary to bow down to the emperor?
I would not like to debate that because I think in the Eastern world it's kind of cultural that you bow before your elders. I mean that's a cultural thing. I would take it.
No, I understand it's a cultural thing, but it's also a cultural thing that a president bears the dignity of a nation, not just his own personality, when he goes before a foreign leader. He's bowing for the entire nation of America, and he is saying America now bows before Japan. That is the symbolism of this man. And by the way, I'm also aware of the fact that how deeply you bow is also very, very significant. Am I correct about that?
Pardon me?
How deeply a man bows is also very significant. Is that not correct?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
In other words, it's not just a slight curtsy now. We are talking about this guy from Chicago or Kenya or Indonesia or Hawaii, wherever he's from. He literally bends from the waist and goes down as though he is on his hands and knees before this character from Japan. It's a shock. It's a shock. It's a shock to all proud Americans who understand that this man literally has no shame when it comes to apologizing for America. And no one knows how low he will go with regard to his desire to apologize for this nation.
Correct.
Now, let's move on. I've made my point. Others agree with me. Most people agree with me who have studied the history of this. You agree with me, though, Mana, that Buddhism has not necessarily been peace-loving and peaceful through its history. Is that correct?
To the best of my knowledge, whatever I have studied the history of Buddhism, it is replete with nonviolence. And
that's not what I said. Christianity is also about nonviolence, is it not?
Yes, it is, but I'm talking about the history, the history of events.
Oh, the history? Well, right now the Buddhists of Sri Lanka have openly taken up the struggle against the Tamil freedom fighters. And so you have Buddhists in Sri Lanka fighting the Tamil freedom fighters. So you can't argue that all Buddhists are just pacifists, can you?
No, but 95% of the Buddhist history is pacifist. Absolutely. I mean,
see, when I get an ignorant caller, no matter how nice they may be or well-meaning, it's of no value to the listener. Even though Buddhism has no concept of a holy war, the doctrine of Buddhism does not at times legitimize the recourse to violence and a just war. And it doesn't matter whatever countries Buddhism has become official in. It's whether it's Theravada Buddhism in Southeast Asia or Tantric Buddhism in Tibet or East Asia, war has often been waged by Buddhists. And at present, the Buddhists of Sri Lanka have openly taken up the struggle against the Tamil freedom fighters. And so what I'm saying to you is that the American concept of Buddhism is Mickey Mouse. It's Donald Duck. People think that Buddhism is pacifist. If you listen to Richard Gere, if you listen to the Dalai Lama, and those who claim there's never been a Buddhist war, they're lying to you. They're absolutely lying to you. And that is just historically not true. Wherever Buddhism has become official ideology, as I've just said to you, there have been wars. And right now, the Buddhists of Sri Lanka are fighting against the Tamil freedom fighters. So I'm not saying that there are people who look to get into war. I'm saying to you that American liberals, primarily those of Hollywood, are ignoramuses when it comes to Buddhism, when it comes to global warming, when it comes to peace, when it comes to love. They're complete and they're out of their element. Let's put it to you that way. Either it's drugs or it's hanging around with people like Larry David who never really understood anything, but they're so full of themselves. They all, you know, it's them right wingers. Yeah, you know, Marty, we're from Brooklyn. We're better than everybody. It's those Guyam. It's those right wingers. You know, we're better than everybody. you know, we know everything. We know everything. We run Hollywood. What are you talking about? They don't know anything. They don't know anything. They're stupid people. And then when you combine the drugs that have infested the brains of Hollywood, you understand that they're completely out of their element when they start talking about things such as Buddhism and peace and love. I am not saying Buddhists are warmongers. I am not saying that Buddhists seek violence. I'm saying the opposite. I am saying the opposite. I am saying that Buddhism compassion does extend to all beings. Did you understand all of this? I understand about karmic transmigration. I understand that to Buddhist animals are perceived as future Buddhas or past humans. I actually see the world that way, and I'm not a Buddhist. So how do you explain that? How come I can see karmic transmigration and have since I'm a child? How come I've always had compassion for animals? How come I'm not the kind of kid who put a cat on fire? How come I'm the kind of kid who brought home animals from the street? How come I'm not a Buddhist? I'm a decent human being. But the American Buddhists have a complete distortion of Buddhism being pacifist, and they get themselves in trouble and they get everyone else in trouble. The reason I'm even talking about it is because you've got Obama in Shanghai and in China. He does not bring up Tibet, and all of the fraudulent liberals from Hollywood who made such a big deal out of Tibet last year when Bush, a year and a half ago when Bush was president, they've gone dead silent. The Klieg lights have gone dead. Richard Gere is nowhere to be found. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? It's their hypocrisy that bothers me. That's what I'm saying. And now let's go back to the bowing symbolism of Obama. Here is a man who is as arrogant and as thin-skinned as they come. He hates American patriots. He has targeted American patriots. He has told Janet Napolitano to make sure that no returning American veteran is not looked at with great care, for example. And yet he has nothing but deference when it comes to foreign leaders. He's laughable. The man is a laughingstock all over the world, don't you know that, except amongst the naive. Anyway, I've made my point and I want to go on. You want to talk about sports, there's only one thing I want to say. Pacquiao won the fight, for those of you who are fight fans, and he's the Philippine champion. He's faster than anybody. His hands are faster than anybody. And he beat the, I believe the fellow was from, is he Cuban? Was the fighter Cuban? I'm not 100% sure, but the other guy was as fast as they can be. And I got to remind you that boxing is still a great sport. It's a wonderful sport. 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The United States insists we do not seek to contain China's rise. On the contrary, we welcome China as a strong and prosperous and successful member of the community of nations.
I went to Chinatown, way back in old Hong Kong, to get some egg foo young, and then I heard a gong. Ling ting tong, glad to sing that song called Tai Samo Kambun Daye, Tai Samo Kambun.
All right, so our imperial leader has a 71-car motorcade. You hear? And you don't know that Michelle Obama has 32 servants. Now, what if McCain had won and he went to China and had a 71-car motorcade? What do you think Al Gorleone, the head of the Gorleone crime syndicate, would be saying? What would the stupid boys at Newsweek be writing if we read that Mrs. McCain had 31 or 32 servants in the White House? Tell me, don't you see the hypocrisy we're living in here with these radical left-wing laborites running America off the rails? It's unbelievable to me. But I've made this point before. Next week is Thanksgiving, my favorite holiday of the year. I've always loved it. And I'm not going to eat my heart out over you. If you let this imposter become president, what can I do about it? If all of the millies of the world who read the Daily News don't even understand what's going on around them, I can't help them. I cannot help them if they are on the road to serfdom, because many of them have been serfs all of their lives. Either they've been slaves of fashion or slaves of sexuality, slaves of this, slaves of that. So to them, what's the difference if they're actually enslaved by a government? It wouldn't matter. So all I can do is look at the news, watch the world going to H in a handbasket, and comment on it. And hopefully you'll continue to enjoy my commentary and my observations. That's the best that can be done right now. The man bows in Japan. People are saying, how low will he go? There's outrage in Washington amongst those who know what this symbolizes. And then we have the issue of today, we just learned minutes ago, that an investigation into the Fort Hood massacre by the jihadist major last week is going to be covered up by the Democrats. And then on top of that, we have the outrage of the New York trial of the terrorist, where they're going to put the brave CIA agents who had the guts to face him down, they'll put them on trial. There's one slap in the face, one insult after another. The American people cannot take it. They can't take much more of this. But I actually think it's part of the strategy of the radicals in the White House, which is to keep banging us so hard and so repeatedly with one insult after another, one body blow after another, one blow to our national pride after another, till eventually we are stupefied and nullified and there's nothing left. I believe that they're that devious. Pennsylvania, Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I have a question and a comment about the trial in New York. this guy is being tried as more or less as an American citizen. Is that correct?
He is given the rights of an American citizen, which are not supposed to be afforded to him.
Okay. If he's given that, then he will probably be found innocent because he was not given his Miranda rights that he can remain silent.
That's correct.
That is correct.
This is all a game on the part of Eric Holder, who, as you well know, has a soft spot for terrorists. You know that.
Yes, I do.
And so we understand that we have an attorney general who knows what this is going to do. You know, we don't have to imagine what's going to happen, because during the 1993 World Trade Center bombing trial of Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, the blind sheikh, if you remember that character, you remember the hook hand?
Yes.
Remember the hook? Well, during that trial of the hook, the blind sheikh, the government, following standard criminal trial rules, had to turn over to the defendants a list of 200 possible co-conspirators. In essence, this list was a complete list of American intelligence agents who were working against al-Qaeda. And according to Mr. McCarthy, who tried the case, this list was delivered to bin Laden in Sudan on a silver platter within days of its production as a court exhibit. So bin Laden found out who the agents were that the Americans were using during the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. Now, if Eric Holder doesn't know that, tell me who does know that. So if Eric Holder does know that, then he wants bin Laden to have a list of American intelligence agents. And we can then assume that our government wants the CIA agents who are overseas risking their lives to be whacked and disappeared.
Yeah.
All right, let's finish that up. Write it down. Put that one in cement. This government apparently wants our agents to be discovered and whacked by the enemy.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The second highest number of foreign students in the United States come from China. And we've seen a 50% increase in the study of Chinese among our own students. There are nearly 200 friendship cities drawing our communities together. American and Chinese scientists cooperate on new research and discovery. And of course, Yao Ming is just one signal of our shared love of basketball. I'm only sorry that I won't be able to see a Shanghai Sharks game while I'm visiting.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time.
It is the Savage Nation Blue Monday. Thanks for listening around America and around the world. Yeah. All right, so what do you want me to do, make a big deal of Obama in China? I mean, Bush was in China, too. A couple of differences. He didn't bow down in Japan and get on his hands and knees and scrape the floor. And I wasn't a big fan of Bush. I mean, be honest with you. When Nixon opened the doors to China, it was, well, maybe a necessity. Maybe it was hasty. It doesn't matter. It's water under the bridge. We are where we are. You're not going to change the tide of human history simply because you talk about it. And China is on a course of world domination. And the question is, what does that mean for us? I mean, we're a rather small nation. 3.5 hundred million people. How many people are in this country? 300 million, 320 million people. China, what? How many people in China? Well, quite a bit more. In fact, the number of excess men in China it exceeds our entire military, if you get the drift. Seems to me they had a policy of encouraging single men for a reason. They've been around quite a while. They do know that any nation that has an excessive population of single men generally goes to war and wins. They use them as cannon fodder. And, of course, single men without families are less likely to worry about such things as wives and children. So you could say we're in a terrible, terrible corner and that the president knows it and he has no choice but to kowtow to the Chinese and do the best he can and get the best deal he can because basically it's a fait accompli, it's over. Very wise man named Aldous Huxley, one of my teachers, not a direct teacher in the sense of I met him, but I read everything he ever wrote, including his articles on furniture and antiques. People don't know he wrote articles on furniture. You may know him as the author of Brave New World. Anyway, Aldous Huxley wrote some very interesting things. One of the things he wrote in the early 50s was that, is that the more America interacts with communist nations, the more America will become like a communist nation, and the more the communist nations will become like the free America. And wow, was he right. Take a look at Britain. You've got a nation that is virtually totalitarian, run by liberals who snoop into everybody's lives, and the liberals say nothing about it, which is very intriguing unto itself. After all the years that the liberals screamed about freedom this, freedom that, you know, no government interference, it seems that when they have the power, they like government interference real well. And China, of course, is a kind of mixed democracy, autocracy. And we're a kind of mixed democracy becoming an autocracy under Mao Bama. Chairman Mao Bama is very much like Chairman Mao without the internment camps, comma, yet, period. That's all. That's to most students of history. Now, I realize that people like Shirley from New York won't get any of this because she reads the Daily News. And to her, that's the entire truth. That plus HBO equals genius. But for those of us who go a little beyond the Daily News and HBO, it's very worrisome indeed. Then you couple that with bringing Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to New York and affording him all the rights and trial of an American citizen, which he is not entitled to. And then you couple that with all of the crooks at Goldman Sachs getting away with virtual piracy, one after the other, you see a almost lawlessness, an anarchy. It's as though there's anarchy coming out of the government, only it's not anarchy. It's anarchy for the boys on Wall Street and totalitarianism for the rest of us. Early, soft totalitarianism, but soft totalitarianism nevertheless. Here's a new story just out from Reuters. Ex-Goldman programmer may avoid jail. The criminal prosecution of Sergei Alenikov, the former Goldman Sachs Group, Inc. programmer, charged this past summer with stealing some of the computer code for the firm's high-frequency trading program, appears headed to a rather anticlimactic conclusion. In a court filing on Monday, federal prosecutors revealed that Alenikov's attorney plans to seek a resolution of the case that could culminate in either a deferred prosecution agreement or a plea to a reduced charge of a misdemeanor. You hear a misdemeanor, it's like you running a traffic light. Running a traffic light. So there it is. In other words, the guy did something terrible, and he's apparently, the prosecutors are ready to go to another direction, and they're going to consider a deferred prosecution. Why? Because law enforcement basically has no case. And this leads me back to the issue of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed coming to New York. And why Obama and Eric Holder want this to happen. I want to remind you that during the 1993, the World Trade Center bombing trial of Sheikh Omar Abdelrahman, the so-called blind sheikh, they had to apply standard criminal trial rules. And what does that mean? The government, meaning prosecutors, had to turn over to the defendants a list of 200 possible co-conspirators. So in other words, this was a sketch of American intelligence on al-Qaeda. And so, according to the prosecutor, McCarthy, this list was then delivered to bin Laden in Sudan within days of it being produced in a court in New York. He took the court exhibit and he went around and bin Laden saw who else was on the list. And he was able to figure out how American intelligence had learned its information and he could anticipate what our future moves were likely to be. Now, if we know this and Osama bin Laden knows this and Obama knows this and Eric Holder knows this, then you have to ask yourself why Eric Holder and Osama bin Laden and Obama are all on the same side with regard to trying KSM in a civilian court, and why this intelligence bonanza for al-Qaeda is being done to begin with. The answer is pretty much built into the question I just presented to you. But since we the people have no power whatsoever in a government, of the government, by the government, and for the government, we can move on to talk about turkey recipes. Virginia Travis, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I have some time in the Navy as an officer, as a ship driver. When we were deployed, our ship would work with foreign navies. And when we would depart from working with them, we would render honors and, you know, man the rails and salute and all. And
yes,
the foreign navy vessel would lower their flag. And I'd never seen it before. I didn't know what to do. Nobody knew what to do. And our captain was on the bridge, and he said, "Hold it. We never lower our flags to foreign navies." And it's the same exact thing with bowing to a foreign head of state.
Right. Obama, in essence, has surrendered to the world.
The same thing as a beta dog. If you see two dogs interacting, you see the alpha dog comes up and the beta dog lays on its back and exposes its neck. It's the same exact
thing. That's like my dog, Teddy. So I'm his alpha dog? Thank God.
Yes, sir.
And this, look, I'm laughing at it because the guy is a disgrace. Obama's a walking disgrace. He's running up the flag of surrender wherever he goes. He says, "We're America's nothing. We're secondary. We're a doormat. Do whatever you want with us."
Our captain,
he has tremendous pride when it comes to crapping on patriots who love borders, language, and culture. He has tremendous pride when it comes to threatening Americans who love this nation. And he has absolutely no pride when it comes to defending a nation's honor overseas. That's how it looks to me. Now, perhaps I am looking through a crystal that's clouded. Perhaps I'm not. That's up for you to decide how you see it. That's how I decide it. Look, life goes on, and you have to do the best you can, as my mother would say. You have to make the best of your life day to day. And I recognize that affairs of state have never been things that the average person can do very much about. And talk radio is a very unique phenomenon where we the people actually get to comment on it, like in the peanut gallery. But we have no effect upon it whatsoever, other than to tell you exactly what we see. I mean, we are intelligent people who see what he's doing. The man has run up the flag of surrender wherever he's gone. He's basically said America is a doormat. Step on us and wipe your muddy feet on us. We don't care. So what are you going to do about it? What I do is I do what I've been doing the rest of my whole life. You know, tend my own garden, try to take care of myself and my family the best I can. Thank God they don't need me. And be nice to animals and strangers as far as I can. Enjoy my boat. I go out on my boat. Yesterday we went up the coast. We went up a little bit up the coast. The day was gorgeous. It was November. The sea lane was calm. And there's something about standing on a deck of a powerboat going up the coast at 15 to 20 knots and looking up that teak deck and watching this thing drive through the water and enjoying the water, enjoying the air, enjoying the birds and seeing the seals and the baby seals and seeing life go. Life just goes on and on and on, the eternal nature of it all. The landforms on the West Coast are astonishing to watch when you realize they're all a result of the Earth, if not volcanic, then, of course, cataclysmic action going back even further. And you realize that what we are experiencing as reality and as Earth, I don't want to get too into it right now, is just the blink of an eye. In other words, all of what we see is the blink of an eye in the history of the world. And, you know, you say, well, what, you know, you got to see what's going on here in the context of it all. And sometimes you have to step back, maybe have a drink and look at it all and say, what are you going to do about it? Do the best you can and pray to God America can survive this wreckage of this cowardly, deferential, dangerous administration. But the best is yet to come. I mean, he's only been in office, 10 months. Look what he's done in 10 months already. He's apologized to every nation on earth. He's threatened every patriot in the country. He's wrecked the dollar. He's run up a debt that nobody will ever be able to pay for. And he has turned us into a world doormat. But Shirley in New York thinks he's doing swell because she reads the Daily News. Well, I don't read the Daily News. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
About the bow again. Never mind Shirley from New York, who doesn't know anything other than that she knows everything. We looked into this again, and the fact of the matter is that Obama bowed deferentially to the emperor's fourth son, and there was no reciprocal bow from the Japanese emperor. None whatsoever. There was no reciprocal bow by the emperor, who traditionally bows to no one. So why would Obama bow to a man who bows to no one? And you play back Cheney, and you see Cheney shaking his hands years ago, a couple of years ago. Cheney shook the guy's hand, and that was good enough. All right, how you doing? And he shook the guy's hand, and that was enough. The guy didn't bow down, because Cheney understood that the bowing is a mark of submission. And it says, I'm a doormat. And Akito is the eldest son of Hirohito. Hirohito, nice fella, Hirohito. Now, this is the same to the king of Saudi Arabia, and took a gold chain around his neck like he just performed a song and a dance for the... Don't you see the picture here? He's a guy who's very mean and very tough to any American who dares stand up to him, but extremely deferential to all of the world's leaders. And that's very, very disturbing to anybody who understands a bit of history other than to Shirley who reads the Daily News, if that's what her name was. For those of you who love liberty, you know what I'm talking about. And I want to play for you now Ching Wang's organ harvesting piece, which I did a long time ago, which should win all sorts of awards. But because I'm the man who was banned in Britain, because I am the man who everyone in the media hates because I'm an independent, the New Yorker called me a party of one, which of course is true, and I'm proud of it. I'm proud I'm a party of one. I am proud that I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I am proud that I coined the concept of independent conservative in the radio business. And I am proud that I'm banned in Britain, frankly. I'm proud in the sense that it shows you how despotic they have become. And I want to play for you now something I did a few years ago about China and how they treat dissidents. Play it.
Hi, this is Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot. Need a kidney? No problem. You need a cornea? No problem. Skin? Skin transplant? No problem. Ears, lungs, eyes, whatever. We got them. Think Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot for the cleanest in organs. If you would like an especially clean pair of kidneys, we've got the gal just for you. Meet Wan Fu. She's 19 years of age, has never drunk, never smoked cigarettes. Her crime? She was caught reading the United States Constitution. She is scheduled for execution sometime during the next 6 months. And we at Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot can arrange a clean pair of kidneys from this young lady. Come and see Cheng Wang's booklet of innocent, clean prisoners for your selection process immediately. Now dial 1-800-GO-ORGAN. That's 1-800-G-O-O-R-G-A-N to get Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot. This month, we have a special. Buy two kidneys, get a spleen free. Buy two lungs, get a heart free. Buy some skin, we'll throw in the hair. Buy two corneas, we'll throw in a nose. Again, 1-800-GO-ORGAN. Cheng Wang's Organic Organ Depot for the organ in your future.
Brilliant. It should win every prize in radio, but it's, of course, ignored by those who can't even conceptualize anything as good as this. I remember I made that up on the spot without a script, and we produced it. It was fabulous. I'm talking before I was syndicated. This goes back, I think, to 1997, 98. Can you believe it? How times change. How times change. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the callers. Las Vegas, Bob, you're on the Savage Nation.
Oh, hi. Yes, I've spent a lot of time in Japan, and I love the Japanese people. But I've noticed they're not really, they don't really like it that much when a gaijin bows down to them. And
what do they feel when a gaijin bows down? What, they're putting them on?
Either they think you're kind of making fun of their custom, or you're sort of kowtowing or something. They're being sarcastic. And sometimes they just good-naturedly
laugh. In other words, it's not really good manners for Obama to have kowtowed to the emperor's son. And you'd think he would know this by now since he's the president.
Savage.
There is trouble in paradise. Welcome to the Savage Nation. So the president's in China. You know, let me put a cap on it. You know how long I've ridiculed libs in Chinese restaurants? I mean, I live in the Bay Area, and I love Asian people. I get when I say love, I mean, I get along with Asian people. They're generally very nice, easy to be around. They have wonderful cuisine, and I just enjoy it, okay? But I observe people wherever I go. I'm a social observer. People observe me. I observe them. You ever watch liberals go into Chinese restaurants or any Asian restaurant, particularly Thai restaurants? They put their hands together and they bow. Or if they ask for water or a napkin, they ask 50 times and say thank you 5,000 times. Oh, thank you. Oh, they're always so deferential to a restaurant. And the Asian people look at them like they're insane. What are you thanking them for a napkin for? You're in their restaurant. They have to give you a napkin. Why are you thanking them for a glass of water? They're required to give you a glass of water. Have you ever seen liberals when the food comes? Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you. Just why? And that's like Obama in China. Obama bowing down to the emperor's fourth son. Same thing. It's just liberalism. It's a disconnect from reality. So we don't have to make more of it than it is. That's all. And if you think that I'm a barbarian and don't understand these things, you're mistaken. I have in my hands a book called The Importance of Living by Lin Yutang. Those of you who have listened to my show since 94 understand the charm of this man and how I've talked for years about the book, The Importance of Living, which I discovered when I was 18 and going through my sufferings of young Werther phase. And I thought, oh, life is horrible, you know, oh, it's me, I can't take it anymore. And then I found this book, The Importance of Living, where he brought the yin and yang together. He taught me that we are basically, although we have a soul, that we're monkeys. Our bodies are that of a monkey. I mean, I know many of you are offended by that, but truthfully, you know, it's been put another way, that we're the Neanderthal diet. But you got to remember that the human body is that of an animal. No matter how you think you're saintly, the minute you disconnect from the fact that you have an animal body, you go crazy. And that's where all your trouble begins. Anyway, this book put me together because there were chapters in it like, let me give you an example. Lin Yutang, The Importance of Living. I didn't write it, by the way. I'm not Lin and I'm not Yutang. But I never saw a book like this, which talked about views of mankind, Christian, Greek, and Chinese, our animal heritage, the monkey epic, on being mortal, on having a stomach, on having strong muscles, on having a mind, and on human dignity and the rise of human civilization. Then he goes into enjoyment of life. That's what I'm getting at. And he talks about whole chapters on sex, on celibacy, a freak of civilization. My favorite chapter was The Enjoyment of Living, on lying in bed. A whole chapter on lying in bed, on sitting in chairs, on conversation, on tea and friendship, on smoke and incense, on drink and wine games, on food and medicine, the inhumanity of Western dress, on house and interiors. And I remember I read this when I was 18 years old, which goes back quite a few decades. And when I first stumbled upon it, I was astounded by this. And it was a combination of sort of our animal bodies with our spiritual beings. In a way, I had never been able to unify the two. You know, kids grow up, they don't know what they are. Either you run too much in one direction or too much in the other. Either you become too much of the spiritual and you try to deny the body, or you become too much of the animal, you know, the pleasure seeker, and you deny your spirit. And this book, for me, brought it all together. And one of the favorite parts for me was Chin's 33 Happy Moments. And I don't know if the people listening to this show, since I'm in a sort of different mood today and I had enough with Obama, this stuff was good stuff. And it was the happy moments of a Chinese as described by a 17th century playwright in China named Chin Shengtan. And he wrote about, he sat with his friends when they were locked up in a temple for 10 days on account of rainy weather, and they thought about what were the truly happy moments of human life, moments in which the spirit is tied up with the senses. And he writes about them, and I'm not going to read all of them to you. I'm going to give you a taste of some of them, and you'll see if you get a kick out of them. Here's one. See if it strikes you as a happy moment in your life. I wake up in the morning and seem to hear someone in the house sighing and saying that last night someone died. I immediately ask to find out who it is and learn that it is the sharpest, most calculating fellow in town. Ah, is this not happiness? Remember this? Remember he wrote that happiness does not consist in the flights of poets, of that kind of thing, but happiness consists in getting your hair cut every 2 weeks and watching your neighbor fall off the roof? That's what I was trying to talk about. In other words, that's human nature, is this normalcy. And also, if you get pleasure in seeing someone you hate fall off a roof, don't be guilty about it. Everyone likes to see their evil neighbor fall off a roof. Here's another one. Wait. It has been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill, refusing to get up. First of all, that unto itself is beautiful. We work so damn hard in America. We never lay in bed. We think it's bad for our hearts. The opposite is true. I'm a big believer in laying in bed. I believe that laying in bed is way underestimated. I think we're just crazy with our running and our dashing and our this and our that. Anyway, listen to this one. It has been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill, refusing to get up. Suddenly, I hear a chorus of birds announcing a clear day. Quickly, I pull aside the curtain, push open the window, and see the beautiful sun shining and glistening, and the forest looks like having a bath. Ah, is this not happiness? Okay? Let's see then. Here's another. A few more. It's so disconnected from today. Here, I love this one. To cut with a sharp knife a bright green watermelon on a big scarlet plate of a summer afternoon. Ah, is this not happiness? You get the picture? In other words, can you see a watermelon on a hot day and just cutting it and get pleasure out of it? That's what he's talking about. We've lost this. We think that because the ad men have so jumbled our brains, the madmen, the advertising, that we have to go somewhere to find happiness. We have to buy something to find happiness. We all know that that's rubbish. I've long wanted to become a monk, but was worried because I would not be permitted to eat meat. If then I could be permitted to become a monk and yet eat meat publicly, why then I would heat a basin of hot water and with the help of a sharp razor shave my head clean in a summer month. Ah, is this not happiness? To keep 3 or 4 spots of eczema in a private part of my body and now and then to scald or bathe it with hot water behind closed doors. is this not happiness? I mean, does this translate well anymore? I mean, I love this book. It reminds you how simple things are. You know, a few more, because it's getting close to Thanksgiving. I feel liberated. I love this one. Wait. A traveler returns home after a long journey. And he sees the old city gate and hears the women and children on both banks of the river talking his own dialect. Ah, is this not happiness? Now, let's say we don't have an old city gate and we don't have our own dialect, or do we? We certainly do have regional accents. How about when you've been on a long business trip and you come back to your city or your town and just the sound of the horns and just the sound of the cab driver, even if he's from Bengali, even if he is a Bengali. Isn't that what makes you feel good and at home and happy? That's what we're talking about. Here's a nice one. I am not a saint, and I am therefore not without sin. In the night I did something wrong, and I get up in the morning and feel extremely ill at ease. I am not a saint, and I'm therefore not without sin. In the night I did something wrong, and I get up in the morning and feel extremely ill at ease about it. Suddenly I remember what is taught by Buddhism, that not to cover one's sins is the same as repentance. So then I begin to tell my sin to the entire company around, whether they are strangers or my old friends. Ah, is this not happiness? Sort of sounds like Oprah. Here's one that I've really lived by. This is me. To open the window and let a wasp out of the room. Ah, is this not happiness? That's a good one. Have you ever let a wasp out of a room or a fly and felt something? Huh? I have. I've done that. To see someone's kite line broken. Ah, is this not happiness? To see a wild prairie fire. Ah, is this not happiness? To have just finished repaying all one's debts. Ah, is this not happiness, Obama? Now, if he went to China and said, I'm finished repaying my debts, by the way, see if you can collect it. Then I would say I would love the guy. You know what I'm saying? To end that little... If he could go to China and say, you know what, let me tell you something. We owe you a couple of $1 trillion. You owe a whole lot of our T-bills. You own them. But let me tell you something, Charlie. Here's the way it's going to go down. We ain't paying you. We can't pay you. You're never going to collect. But I'm willing to negotiate right now 10 cents on the dollar. Then I would say, ah, is this not happiness? 1-800-449-8255. This is Michael Savage, James in Wisconsin. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, first off, I appreciate and respect your work and yourself.
Thank you.
I love it when you go off on these stories and get into the stories. I've never heard of all this. I have a high school diploma. I've never had the chance for a higher education.
Let me tell you, listen, no one's ever heard of this book because it was never taught in college. I didn't find it in college. I found it in a friend's father's library. Artie, if you're listening, you know who I'm talking about, your dead father. He was a guy, my father's friend, who was not an educated man himself. He worked in a garment center as a cutter, but he was well-read. He had a nice library. And when I would go over to my friend Artie's house to play the conga drums and smoke marijuana, sometimes I would go to the father's library and look at the books. And I remember falling in love with this book, The Importance of Living. That's, I mean, it wasn't given to me in college. You know what I'm saying?
I love that because I'm hearing you read this stuff, and it's like, I see and hear that all the time in my life.
You mean in your own life, the simplicity of it?
Yeah. And, you know, and I never feel guilty, like, for example, with the guy falling off the roof. I mean, I've never had my neighbor fall off, but I've had neighbors that do other stupid things, and I look at him and I'm like, you know, he deserved it. He's a moron.
There you go. That's right. It's human nature to take pleasure in it. Here's another one. Listen to this. This kept me going for decades. Only those who take leisurely what the people of the world are busy about can be busy about what the people of the world take leisurely. Now, that's written by, that's so Chinese. Only those who take leisurely what the people of the world are busy about can be busy about what the people of the world take leisurely. Meaning, people, you know, in other words, if you turn work leisure into work, you'll really do good at it.
My wife and I, a few years back, we were running crazy all the time. I have two kids. In fact, my son is 18 and going into the Marine Corps, but that's another story.
God bless you. God bless you for being a real American, and thank you for doing that.
And, anyhow, we were going crazy trying to keep up with things, and then we realized, you know what? If we just caught the attitude that every day is a work day and every day is a day off, it's so much easier, you know?
Now, look at this whole chapter on growing old gracefully. You know, there was a whole couple of pages, James, on how to pick a wife. It was amazing that how the Chinese people look towards how a man looks towards a woman. He only sees a woman in terms of what kind of mother she would make for his future children. And, you know, if you were to teach that to young men, how it would change all of society.
Well, you know.
Think about it. What if you taught young men that instead of like the wink of an eye, like Larry David, you know, the more sex, the better. You're always in heat because you're such a stud. What if you taught a young man that when you go out with a girl, try to pick someone who could be a potential wife and think of what kind of genes she has and what kind of mother she's going to be to your children. Can you imagine how that would revolutionize this society?
It would go a long ways because, for example, like I said, my son has never had a girlfriend per se. He knows girls that, you know, that he's gone to school dances with, things of that nature. He's never wanted to get involved with anyone. And I asked him, I said, what's the deal with that? You know, and I picked on him about certain things. And he says, Dad, you know, I got so much to do ahead of me. And he says, plus, have you looked around at the girls in our area? He's like, well, I live in Wisconsin. Do I need to say more?
Well, the right one will come along, and he'll know it when it does, and they'll probably have beautiful children. And James, I want to send you a copy of Band in Britain. I'm going to send two of them, one for you and one for your wonderful son going into the Marine Corps. I have only a few copies left of this edition. I know they're going to be gone before the end of Thanksgiving. I want you to have two of them. Thank you for that beautiful call, and thanks for indulging Michael Savage in one of his drift-offs. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Things in the long sweep of history, you got to realize that Obama's an anomaly in the American system. He's an experiment. He is an extreme left-wing extremist. He's an extreme left-wing extremist. He's not only a left-winger, but an extreme left-wing leader. He is surrounded by extremists. This is unique to America. It's unique to American history. We've never faced anything like this. And the only way to see it is through the optic chiasma. In other words, what if we had had a fake right-winger win, someone who ran sort of to the center but was really a deep right-winger, almost like a Ku Klux Klan member, and suddenly he appointed czars who were members of the Ku Klux Klan in their youth, or members of white pride groups and called for the overthrow of freedoms and the replacement of talkers in the radio only with white men who espoused the party line. I mean, can you imagine living through that? Well, that, you have to understand that to those of us who see what this man is and what he's doing, it is the equivalent, but you need to see things through the optic chiasma. You have to reverse things to see them as they are. You certainly can't permit the twisted brains of the media to tell you what reality is. If they knew what reality is, they wouldn't be in the media. They'd be doing something useful. They wouldn't be lying to you every day. We are living through the most extremist administration in American history. Any historian knows that, any real historian. I'm not talking about the plagiarists who are put on CNN. Whether we can survive this is a matter of question. I don't know that we can survive him. Because if he should legitimize 30 million illegal aliens, which Napolitano said they're going to do last week, if they do that, there is nothing to prevent this man from being president for the next 50 years. Like Idi Amin, districts and illegal aliens, birth rates and large families, they'll all vote D forever. There'll be a one-party system. It'll be the end of America. We'll be living in a total autocracy. And I don't know the extreme or how far it could go, but it could happen. It could happen here. This is only 10 months into this extremist's presidency. And those of us who see it in the broad sweep of history are called every name under the sun. It's why I was targeted and banned from entering the Britain. And the more I see what Britain's becoming, the more I realize it's an honor. By the way, they've done me a great honor. The Orwellian nightmare of Britain with snoops and police looking into garbage and looking into green this and carbon that, it's astounding to me. They're arresting people for singing in stores who are not paying royalties to musicians. It's the Orwellian nightmare. So it's no wonder that they picked on Michael Savage and nobody else in the American media. And I mean, I wrote my book and I am plugging it, yes, because it's my document, my way of setting the record straight. This is my story. I'm Billy Budd, and I took the noose off my neck. How's that? I can guarantee you, as I stand here, they will be seen for the despots that they are. Already the woman who did it to me was fired a day after I appeared on the BBC. They threw her overboard because they realized it was untenable. She was not at all acceptable to the British people. And I'm telling you, I wrote Banned in Britain not to make a fortune, not to make the bestseller list. It's not even on a list because it's only published by me. Banned in Britain. I wrote it to set the record straight. And I am going to make the statement. I'll make it again. They try to put the noose over my neck and hang me from a yard on. They, Mills, we discovered through the legal proceedings. I mean, this is a book that every liberal should be reading, every libertarian should be reading. I have not promoted this book for well over a month now. Michael Savage is the enemy of globalism. Globalism is a bipartisan problem. The reason I have been picked on is because when we still had a Republican president, I was the one who pointed out that he was hollowing out America by flooding us with illegal aliens. It was I, Michael Savage, who attacked the Republican president, George Bush, for basically, shall I say, robbing the Treasury with his Treasury secretary. I was the one who said that the U.S. Congress should be outsourced. Okay, it's sarcasm, isn't it? Well, apparently the people in high places heard me, and they had their minions in England do this. It's a backwoods way or backdoor way of trying to end free speech in America. Banned in Britain, Michael Savage, only on my website.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's what's going on in the Savage Nation. Obama kowtows to the Chinese. He spoke to Chinese students over the weekend and told them he did not seek to stop the rise of China. Now, first of all, he can't, but why would he go to our main global competitor and make a statement such as this? And where are the Hollywood leftists such as Richard Gere, who was so ready to confront China over Tibet a few years ago? Did they keep their mouths shut to keep Obama from looking bad? Of course. While you're getting ready to cook your turkey, is Obama getting ready to cook our goose? And now on to Turban Durbin, that Senator Turban Durbin. He says terrorists are good for the economy. I'm not making this up. As Obama is closing down the prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, Senator Turban Durbin of Illinois is begging for them to be brought to a prison in Illinois. He says that having the terrorists there is good for the economy. What? If you're from Illinois, how do you feel about what your senator has said? How would you feel if your senator said that? It was announced last week that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the terrorist who planned 9/11, is going to be tried in the United States in New York City. Over the weekend, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano said that she wanted to see the American justice system to run its course. What? With such madness, is Big Sis amiss once more? Rhode Island to look at legalizing pot. A state panel is looking at how much money Rhode Island could make from legalizing and taxing marijuana. Is Federal Hill higher than we thought? How has pot ruined your life? And will Obama try to make medical marijuana part of his socialized medicine plan? For all I know, they may make it a government requirement that not only must you buy a medical health plan from the government, but you have to smoke a joint provided by the government in order to qualify. Here are some news stories, some news roundups from the nation and the world, so to speak. It's pretty, I don't know whether to say depressing or nullifying or numbifying. Here are some of the stories that you just won't believe what's going on. Obama has a 71-car motorcade in China. Now, this is the man who talks about global warming, carbon dioxide, pollution, green is beautiful, small is green is small. 71-car motorcade. Can you believe this? And speaking of China, a CNN reporter has been detained in Shanghai for wearing an Obama/Mao T-shirt. Freedom of speech? USA Today newspaper, Obama administration wants federal government to regulate local transit agencies. I guess they want to take over the subways now. Boston Globe, doctors urge a focus on geriatrics. They prod medical schools as population ages. Providence Journal, state panel begin research on revenue stream from legalized marijuana. New York Times, money trickles north as Mexicans help unemployed relatives. You hear this? They're sending the money back to us from Mexico.
Jesus.
Fox News says administration lowers bar for success in Afghanistan. War seeks exit strategy. It's simple. Just get the hell out of there. Houston Chronicle, GOP's latest foes hail from Tea Party. Republicans in five state races may find new fights on their right flanks. It's about time. New Jersey Star Ledger, New Jersey Governor-elect Chris Christie plans to talk about taxes. USA Today, state police forces shrink. San Francisco Chronicle, California slashes the amount of money it will spend on the 210 census. Experts warn a flawed count. Why do they even bother? We know they're going to include illegals. Washington Times, Black Panthers denounce the new Black Panthers. They say the group accused of voter threats stole their name. Birds of a feather? Washington Post, the trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in New York elicits a strong opinion. No kidding. Big one. Wash Times, U.S. troops battle both the Taliban and their own rules of engagement. Oh, it's a lose-lose. It's a lose-lose situation. L.A. Times, healthcare bills could jeopardize states' consumer protection laws. Houston Chronicle, Farrah Fawcett's family rocked by claims of secret lover. Duh. Palm Beach Post, Gore's presentation on climate change in Boca Raton drew 200 protesters who were not allowed inside. USA Today, more U.S. job hunters are looking for work in other nations. New York Post, New York mulls $1 billion in new taxes on medical services. Jerusalem Post, unilateral Palestinian declaration of independence would not succeed, Israel foreign minister says. Swedish town restricts immigrant weddings. London Times, Britain cuts down forests to keep green power stations burning.
That's very green indeed.
Just won't believe what's going on. FBI refused to probe Fort Hood jihadi despite contact with Al-Qaeda. You heard that story. Major Nidal Hassan, corresponded by email late last year and this year with a radical cleric in Yemen, who has criticized the U.S. for waging war against Muslims, but the contact did not lead to an investigation by Barbara Boxer's FBI chief, Mr. Mueller. You got to remember who appointed Mueller. Barbara Boxer asserted that the appointment of Bob Mueller was a great idea. Now, I have been a fan of Mr. Mueller because although he's, you know, comes from a liberal city and was a liberal judge, I thought he did a very fair job until now. But now I see that the failure is endemic in the government. Wherever you turn, the government has failed us. You know, they say this is anti-government talk. Well, let me ask you something. How do you feel today with the dead and wounded walking around Fort Hood and them all pointing fingers at anyone who says anything about radical Muslims? I'll be right back.
Savage.
The anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall came and went, yet Obama, who seems to be the most traveled president in recent history, did not attend. Joining us now is Ellis Washington, who wrote an article on this on WorldNet Daily. Ellis Washington, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Give us the background on your article.
Michael, thank you very much for having me once again before your great audience of the Savage Nation. It's always a pleasure. The article, Why Obama Can't Go to Berlin, was inspired by an article that I read by Rich Lowry. He's an editor at National Review, and he had written an article a few days before titled Why Obama Will Not Go to Berlin. So it was kind of a play on his article. And what he did, he had listed two other great statesmen of the past that gave famous speeches at the Berlin Wall. We all know about JFK's 1963 speech, subtitled Ich bin ein Berliner, I am a Berliner. And then in 1987, Reagan's famous speech, Tear Down This Wall. And recently, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel called President Obama and requested that he attend the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall that was going to be held right there in front of the Brandenburg Gate. And Obama, although he's the most traveled president in the history of the United States presidency, basically said, if I can quote Rich Lowry, Ich bin beschäftigt, which would be translated, I'm too busy. So apparently President Obama's got other things on his agenda other than going to the site of where communism was literally defeated. And it's just amazing that he doesn't have time to participate in such a very important event. But I've heard since then that he has sent a video recording of himself giving a big-winded speech. And by the way, he didn't mention Ronald Reagan. He didn't mention Margaret Thatcher, the two most important statesmen responsible for the fall of the Berlin Wall and for the end of the communism in the Soviet bloc countries all over the world. So it's just amazing. But he did have time to work in that being the first African-American president is such an important event, and Angela Merkel being the first woman chancellor. Those two events have absolutely nothing to do with the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of communism, Michael.
Obama flew to Greece in a failed attempt to get the Olympics but didn't go to Germany for this?
You know, it was amazing. He was asked, his press secretary was asked, on the night of the elections on November 3rd, you know, what was he doing? Was he watching the election returns? And Obama, through his press secretary, said he was watching a HBO documentary about himself. And it reminded me of that famous phrase, Nero fiddled while Rome burned. Because here this guy is just so detached from, you know, his party, you know, suffering terrible election losses in Virginia and what was the other state? New Jersey. And he's watching a documentary about himself. And like you mentioned, he's got time to go every other place in the world at the drop of a hat, including over to Europe to, you know, participate in various meaningless UN conferences. But yet, here is a historical event of biblical proportions, the fall of the Berlin Wall, which was the first domino to fall, which led to a complete obliteration of Soviet hegemony across the world, particularly in the Soviet bloc countries like Czechoslovakia, like Poland, Latvia, Estonia, and all the other countries. They were eventually able to have their own freedom and enjoy the joys of democracy and free elections, thanks to Ronald Reagan.
Do you think history is going to be as kind to Obama as the media currently is to him?
That's an excellent question, Michael. And one of the things I wrote in the article was like the dirty little secret about the Democrat Party, about Barack Obama and his legion of fascist minions in the White House, is that they were on the wrong side of history time and time again, including this situation with the Berlin Wall. Remember, liberals did not cheer when the Berlin Wall fell. Matter of fact, they, including people like, you know, his conservative, so-called conservative advisors like Colin Powell, they was trying to, up to the last moment, trying to beg Ronald Reagan not to say that great statement, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, because they were worried it's going to antagonize the Soviet Union and we don't want to, you know, stir up trouble, things like that. But you cannot demand your rights from your knees. You have to stand and face your aggressor face to face. And I remember Margaret Thatcher, she was always fond of saying, never appease an aggressor. And Michael, we're doing just that now. It's like Neville Chamberlain has been brought back from the grave. And not only are we appeasing aggressors at every turn, we're literally bowing to them. We're on our knees to them. We're coming to them like China with hat in hand, begging them for our civil rights. And it's just really an abomination. And I remember not only Obama, but, you know, his socialist colleagues in the academy and in the media in Hollywood, they didn't have a party when the Berlin Wall fell. But I'm going to tell you who did have a party, Michael. People in East Berlin, people in West Berlin, families were being reunited that had been apart for almost 30 years. In Latvia, they were partying. In Estonia, in Poland, in Lithuania, in Georgia, in the Ukraine, in Czechoslovakia, and on and on and on. We're talking about over a billion people, Michael. At that time, over one-third of the population was free, starting with the fall of the Berlin Wall. And the courageous and the uncompromising moral stance of Ronald Reagan and Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher.
It seems as though the Obama administration is building a new kind of wall now.
Michael, you're absolutely right. You could not be, the irony couldn't be more stark. 22 years ago, on June 12, 1987, President Reagan stood tall like a man before the Brandenburg Gate and demanded in front of the world to Chairman Mikhail Gorbachev, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. And now we have this diminutive neo-Marxist president 20 years later in 2009 that is basically not only not tearing down the Berlin Wall, but is metaphorically, so to speak, through his policies and through his geopolitical connections that he's doing, he's rebuilding the Berlin Wall brick by brick. It is really astounding, and that the media, the Stalinist-controlled media here, Michael, is silent on this. They're not challenging him. They just bow down and pay obeisance to every neo-Marxist, socialist, communist policy that this president is engaged in is really appalling.
Don't get me started.
Michael, in conclusion, I just wanted to say it's two major policies that all the members of the Savage Nation and any freedom-loving American must put their might to defeat, and that is the upcoming socialist health care bill that just passed the House, but we're praying that it will not pass the Senate and will be defeated. And the second thing is the United Nations conference in Copenhagen on the climate change treaty that Obama's going to attend December 7th through the 18th. If that treaty is passed, with the stroke of a pen, Obama will concurrently destroy America's Constitution as well as make the United States a servile client of the United Nations into perpetuity. And we just hope and pray with Michael Savage, with you leading us, my friend, that we will be able to defeat these two tragic policies that Barack Obama is trying to perpetrate against the American people.
Ellis Washington, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Once again, Michael, I want to thank you very much, sir, for having me on in front of the great Savage Nation audience. And anytime you want to have me on again, sir, I'm at your beck and call. Keep up the fight, Michael, and God bless.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
One of my most vocal supporters and the man who's trying very hard to wake the British up and how it's being ignored by most in the mainstream media is Pastor James David Manning of Atla World Ministries. He joins us to talk about who he thinks should visit Obama in the White House.
Well, thank you again, Michael, for allowing me to be on your broadcast, to have a little space on the program here. I truly appreciate it. I don't want to overstate it. I don't want to get all mushy and everything. But God knows I want you to know that I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to your very interesting audience that you have. I mean, the feedback I get from the people that listen to you is absolutely incredible. I think everybody that's a part of your audience ought to be a part of the New World Order in terms of structuring it to focus on America's restructuring and becoming a great America again. Let me say this, though, Michael, is I got something that I really want to express, and that is this. I want to put forth a call to Mr. Barack Hussein Obama, the alleged president of these United States, that he would invite his Kenyan grandmother, Sarah Hussein Obama, to the White House for Thanksgiving dinner, and then let her stay through the Christmas season and New Year's. But he has not invited her. I want to know why not. I mean, the White House visitors list has been recently released. On that list, it appears that Jesse Jackson has been to the White House six times in the last 6 months. Al Sharpton has been twice. Oprah Winfrey has been twice. But Grandma Sarah Obama, his father's mama. I mean, everybody's running around here talking about Obama is a family man. And isn't it great to see a family man, black family man, finally we see a black man with his family in the White House? Yeah, all right. Okay, so we see him with Michelle the fist bumper. We see them together. But what about Grandma? I mean, don't you think that he should reach out to Africa? I mean, hands across the Atlantic, hands across the water, reach out in over into Kenya. They're in the belly of poverty, disease, and despair. Reach there with now his mighty powers, and not as a government official, mind you, but just as a grandson, giving his grandmama the opportunity to put on some nice things and get on a nice plane, and maybe they'll let her fly first class. And we haven't heard one word about that. Why don't you do that, Obama? Hey, I'm stating that you ought to do it. And Obama, hey, If you don't do it, if I don't hear something by, now this is not a threat or anything, you know, but I'm simply saying, well, if Obama won't invite her to America, then our church will invite her. Yeah, man, the church, the Outlaw World Missionary Church, we'll pay her fare. We'll bring her over. We'll take her down to Rock Radio City Music Hall. We'll take her out to see the Statue of Liberty. We'll send her down to Disney World. We'll do it. If Obama don't do it, we'll do it. Yet Obama hasn't thought for one second that he ought to bring his Kenyan. I mean, come on, man. Why don't you reach out to Africa? Aren't you supposed to be the first African-American president? Why don't you give Africa some play? This man ain't even thought about that. Anyway, I think this. Here's the deal. I'm saying this, that Obama should invite his grandmama, and if he doesn't do it, then I'm going to do it. And I got people standing with me, say they'll pay the expense, they'll put on first-class flight out of Kenya, out of Nairobi, right here to New York City, and then they'll pay the expenses. I got people saying they'll do that. They haven't said very much else about doing anything like that for me. But anyway, let me tell you why I think Obama has not invited Grandma Sarah Obama to America yet. The reason being is because if Grandmama comes, Grandmama is going to tell the world press, Obama was born in Kenya. I was there. She's going to tell it. And Obama's trying to keep it quiet. She's going to tell it, and everybody knows. That's why Obama has not brought her, because she's going to tell it. And by the way, she's going to be right. Listen, Sarah Obama, Obama's grandmother, stated that she was there the date of his birth. That woman got no reason to lie. She said this before he became the president of America, allegedly. She said it before he became senator of Illinois. She has been saying this now for years because it's been true since 1961. That's how come she said it. I mean, come on now. Everybody talk to me. Let's come on now. What's wrong with that? I mean, first of all, here, two things. One is, before my time is up, man, thank God, Michael, that you let me have this time. Brother Savage, if I may call you that. Listen, first of all, need to invite Grandmama to come to New York, come to America, rather, and spend the next 2 or 3 months, way past New Year's, way past January. Let her see some snow. She probably never seen any snow in her life. Let her see some snow in Washington. Yeah. And let her see you hold your State of the Union meeting. When you going to do that? January 20th? What's that going to do? Your first State of the Union. Why don't celebrate your full first year? Grandma ought to be here since you dissed her. You disrespected her. You wouldn't let her come to the inauguration. Well, now let her be here for the first year anniversary and your State of the Union speech. Man, hey out there. Hey out there. What's wrong with Obama? What's wrong with that man? I mean, he ought to give Africa some play. Here's a man and his grandmama ain't been to America yet. Hey! This can't continue. Let me tell you something. Here, two things. And I'm through. We've said them already, and I'm repeating now, so you know what I'm going to say. But anyway, I'm going to say it again anyhow. First of all, I want to thank Michael Savage for allowing me to have this space on the program. All right, I want to say that. And the other thing is I want to let you know, that we've been trying to put this nation back together again. I believe wholeheartedly that God has commissioned us and given us the ability to be able to speak truth to power. I do. And our ministry is located in the heart of Harlem on 123rd Street and Lenox Avenue, two blocks away from where Bill Clinton has his office at present. I can look out my window and see Bill. I'm trying to see if Monica's up there in the office with him, because he's on a building on the 14th floor right here in Harlem. Yeah, that's right. But the other thing, and I believe God. I just believe the Lord, and I thank God that a lot of people that are supporting us in our efforts here in this community. But I just think it is a shame and a scandalous that Obama has not turned around and given Africa some respect, and a double dog shame and a double dog scandalous that he would let his grandmother miss the inauguration and then let her sit there in that village in Kenya in all that squalor and poverty, and will not bring her to America. And then finally, I heard his brother. Obama's got a brother, another one. Everybody heard about the poor one that was living on $1 a day there with Grandma Sarah in Kenya. I heard he's got another one over there in Hangzhou, China now, writing a book, getting ready to capitalize on the Obama fame. And so, I mean, this guy's got relatives all over everywhere. Why don't we see some of them? I mean, ain't this about family? I mean, Tyler Perry, go talk to Obama. Tell him something. That this man just dissed his grandmama. And anyway, listen, I know you've heard what I've had to say. I thank God for the opportunity to have said it here today on the Michael Savage, Savage Nation broadcast. And well, next week, if Obama has not responded, then I'm going to put forth a nationwide call for y'all to help me send somebody over there to Kenya to talk to Obama's grandmama, and we'll bring her here and let her have a great time here in New York over the Christmas holidays, in America, rather, over the Christmas holidays. Well, thank y'all so very much. And our website is atlah.org. That's ATLAH.org. Once again, our website is atlah.org, ATLAH.org. And be sure to log on to the Manning Report when you get an opportunity to do so.
Pastor Manning, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you again. Thank you so very much, Michael, for allowing me this space on your program.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Obama is imposing socialism at home, and he's courting socialists abroad. As I've been telling you, he visited China over the weekend, and here's how they introduced him. Listen.
Obama. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the 44th President of the United States, President Barack Obama.
And here's how the Great One began his speech.
Nong Ho. Good afternoon. It is a great honor for me to be here in Shanghai and to have this opportunity to speak with all of you. I am very sorry that my Chinese is not as good as your English, but I am looking forward to this chance to have a dialogue.
Wait, play the beginning of that again.
Nong Ho.
Did he say Don Ho? But this isn't the joking matter, because Obama says he isn't interested in containing China.
The United States insists we do not seek to contain China's rise. On the contrary, we welcome China as a strong and prosperous and successful member of the community of nations. America imports from China many of the computer parts we use, the clothes we wear, and we export to China machinery that helps power your industry. This trade could create even more jobs on both sides of the Pacific, while allowing our people to enjoy a better quality of life. And as demand becomes more balanced, it can lead to even broader prosperity.
He doesn't want to contain the world's biggest dictatorship. He wants them to prosper. Is it possible to have a weaker foreign policy? Wait, he keeps going.
There is a Chinese proverb, "Consider the past and you shall know the future." Surely we have known setbacks and challenges over the last 30 years. Our relationship has not been without disagreement and difficulty. But the notion that we must be adversaries is not predestined, not when we consider the past. Indeed, because of our cooperation, both the United States and China are more prosperous and more secure.
You see, to Obama, basketball is more important than bombs. He's even spouting Chinese proverbs.
I think that the more freely information flows, the stronger the society becomes. I've always been a strong supporter of open and internet use. I'm a big supporter of non-censorship.
That's right. Actually, discover the past and you shall know the future. Well, China's past involves the death of 70 million innocent Chinese people at the hands of Mao Zedong. Let's pray that's not what the future holds. Either I tell you what I think is happening because I believe in freedom, individual freedom. I don't believe in state tyranny. or I don't go on the radio. I just retire and I disappear because there's no reason to do a radio show unless I tell you what I think is going on. What's the point of it? I'm going to just entertain you with meatloaf recipes. The problem is this. Here's the basic problem. The problem is that I'm slightly ahead of my time with regard to what I'm telling you. The people are not quite ready for this. They will be after it's too late. Once it's too late and they actually see what happened, they'll say, well, I heard that years ago. I didn't believe the guy because he wasn't a liberal. I didn't believe him because I was told he was a bad guy. I didn't believe him because he spoke in a loud voice. I didn't believe him because he wasn't polite enough. I didn't believe him because he sounded too much like my father. I didn't believe him because he sounded like my uncle. I didn't believe him because he sounded like the men used to sound like years ago, and I don't like that sound. I like polite men who put a knife in my back. Okay? Well, okay. One day you'll wake up and say, wait a minute. Everything this guy was saying in 08, 09 about Bush, about Clinton Bush, about Clinton Bush Obama, the road to Marxism, the American self-immolation, what's happening, where we are, that it's purposeful, not by accident. We saw it on the it started with Clinton. The real downfall started with Bill Clinton. When you saw the factories, when NAFTA was put through, that was the beginning of the end. And we try to stop it. We try to warn you. Remember the giant sucking sound? Remember Ross Perot came along? You don't even know who Ross Perot is anyway. He came along and said, well, I pick up the hood, blah, 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 and I can tinker around. We loved him. We loved the folksy double talk. He was a fraud, in my opinion. He was working for the Democrats to try to suck votes away from the Republicans in order to elect Clinton. I remember the whole scam. He disappeared right after the election. And the reason I say that is that his company, EDS at the time, was running the doing the processing of the welfare checks. I remember talking about it very briefly when I was a local talk show host, 94, 95, 96. Yeah, it was on 94, just around that time. The guy came along and he started, pick up the hood and I tinker with that carburetor, that giant sucking sound, blah, 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 blah. So he got like 7% of the votes, sucked off the votes for the Republicans, and put Bill Clinton in office. Why? Then disappeared from politics. The reason was is that his company, EDS, Economic Data Service or whatever it was, I think that's, pardon me if I forget the initials, was the chief accounting firm or the firm that accounted for and printed the checks for the welfare department. So, in other words, the reason he wanted a Democrat to win, even though he pretended to be conservative, as I analyzed it, was because the more people on welfare, the better for his business. I said this on the air. All right, so it starts with Clinton, giant sucking sound, NAFTA. Then we see whole factories going out of America. The Chinese are buying it up like termites. Okay, we'll take that, that, and that, send everything, including the equipment, but leave the workers here. We don't need them. We get someone to work, you know, for a dollar a day at the time. Just send us all of the hardware. Okay, we don't need any of your workers. You stay here and you build a website. Go ahead, build yourself a website, make Halloween costumes. We're going to take your factories and machine tools go over, machine factories go over. But it goes back to Bush 1. Do you remember the FSX scandal of Bush 1 when the Japanese were acquiring the ability to build a fighter jet from George Bush's administration? So you could say, well, who's the devil? I mean, the devil's in the details. It depends upon who's doing it to you at what time. The question is, why do we get one scoundrel after another in the White House? That's what I want to know. Why do we get one scoundrel after another? That's what I want to know. Answer, because nobody else would take the job. I haven't watched a ball game in years, men in striped suits. I mean, I get it. I understand it's skillful and all, but not now. It's like a 19th century game. Take me out. Peanuts and Cracker Jack. How could grown men, I hear them talking. They look intelligent. They look like they're college educated. Excuse me, that explains it. They actually talk about a game. I go into a restaurant, there's a game on, I leave. If I go into a restaurant and in the bar area they have a ball game on of any kind, I walk out of the restaurant. Stop it. Stop it. Just stop it. I remember years ago when I was allowed to visit England, before I even found that I wasn't allowed to visit England, I used to visit England, but I haven't done so in 20 years because if I had only known I'd be banned, I would have gone more. But I had no idea I'd be banned, so I stopped going 20 years ago for whatever reason. I didn't need any dental work, and I was not interested in the fabulous cuisine that they're famous for. So I stopped going, I don't know when, 20 years ago. Then I had a repetitive nightmare about being trapped at Heathrow to top it off. Remember I've been telling you this for 15 years? Isn't this odd? 15 years I've told you on the radio I have a repetitive nightmare about being trapped at Heathrow and I can't find the plane and I can't get out. Then I'm blah, 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 I'm banned. So anyway, what I'm saying to you, when I was in England like 20 years ago, I remember there was some pubs, they had signs outside. It says, men in dirty clothing and work boots are not allowed in here. I said, that's nice. I mean, I have nothing against dirty boots, but if you're going to go have a drink and a bite, you don't need to see, like, people with mud on their feet. You know, there's going to be a separate pub for them. So you say, well, you're not a populist anymore because you don't like men with dirty clothing. No, I really don't like men with dirty clothing, if you don't mind. I can't help it. I'm not exactly ready to go to the mattress or buying brassieres and women's clothing now in Japan. I'm not making it up. 2 out of 3 Japanese men want to stay at home, bake, and wear women's clothing, according to this article. And that there are stores now catering to this trend in Japan. Can you imagine a nation of samurais becomes a nation of girly men? How did this happen? How does the entire construct collapse in your lifetime? I don't get it.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday?
It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.